Aikman versus the Commonwealth. Mr. Schnuck, you're up.
Thank you, Judge.
Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
5 minutes, please.
I know you know this. It's ultimately your responsibility. We'll try to remind you.
And I will try to see if you'll let me sit down at the appropriate time, but we'll play that by ear.
We almost never do.
May it please the Court, Lloyd Schnuck on behalf of Mr. Aikman. This is a case in the era of CSI when forensic evidence takes on great significance, where I think it's absolutely crucial that the forensic evidence be done well and be...
Well, let me ask you this question. Kind of underpinning everything is that this person wasn't qualified. That seems to be the argument. Is there any statute, rule, regulation, or case that you have or can cite to that says nursing testimony in a sexual assault case is limited to nurses who carry the same certification as opposed to the normal training experience certification, regular Rule 2702A 1 and 2 qualifications?
That's one of the very odd things about this, so that although the sane nurse is defined in statute, the statute doesn't say what the sane nurse gets to do as a result of being a sane nurse.
Let me ask an even more fundamental question, the one that Judge Russell just asked, and for the benefit of the law students that are in the room, and this might be like one of those trick questions you see on the bar exam for, you know, evidence, but an expert witness, the only difference between an expert witness and any other kind of a witness is they get to offer an opinion. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
So as expert, yes.
Yeah, they get to offer an opinion. As I understand it, as I understand this record, this particular nurse, I'm probably going to butcher her last name, Balsunis?
I think she would pronounce it Balchunas.
Balsunis.
As she says, Bal with a sneeze at the end. Balchunas.
The only opinion that I see that she offered was when she testified that it was not common to see trauma, even if it is a violent rape on a pubescent female. And that wasn't objected to, but it seems to me that's the only opinion that she offered. So if that's the case, and the thrust of your argument seems to be that because she lacked a certification, everything she did was somehow infirm, I don't understand where her lack of expertise comes in, given that, and this maybe is related, but more broad than Judge Russell's question he just asked. I guess the bottom line is, so what? If she hasn't offered an opinion that no one objects to, then why do we care whether she's an expert or not?
I guess the answer to that would be, and it is not, I can't point to a particular Virginia case that says this, but I put references in my brief to, for example, the comments of Professor Winkelried about the three different functions that experts can serve, and one of them is the reporting expert, that if you have to have a particular credential, you have to have particular experience or expertise to be able to make a particular observation. That's not specifically an opinion, but it is an observation that only someone with that expertise would be in a position to make.
But with respect to the evidence that's in question here, she testified that she's a nurse, not a certified sane nurse, although she's had the training, she just doesn't have the certification. But what she essentially did was take what we call a PERK kit, P-E-R-K, which stands for Physical Evidence Recovery Kit, on a rape victim, which is, you know, tissue samples, swabs, and, you know, packaging them up properly and so forth, basically following a list of instructions that are packaged with the kit. She testified that she basically did all that, followed the instructions, sealed them, and, you know, turned them over to a police officer who then presumably sent them off to a lab. Given that, why is it necessary that she have any certification of any sort for simply following a set of instructions like that?
Well, I guess we have to realize, first of all, that she was specifically approved as an expert, as a sane expert.
But again, she didn't testify to any expertise. I mean, she didn't offer any opinion based on any expertise.
But I think, Your Honor, that to perform a sane evaluation, the sexual assault evaluation, that a sexual assault nurse examiner evaluation requires expertise, it requires experience, and it requires that somebody have looked at you to say you're doing it right. Well, nobody has done that.
Well, Mr. Snook, let me ask you this question, and maybe it's semantics. You just said she was offered as a SANE nurse. That's not what they offered her for, at least that's not the verbiage they used. It was a sexual, she was an expert on sexual assault forensic examinations. She testified that she performed them often, that she had forensic examination training and experience, and that she had done this many, many times. Given that, setting aside the title issue, just that that's the subject matter, if we go through the requirements of Rule 2702 of the Virginia Rule of Evidence on Expert Qualifications, it's basically that through education, training, or experience, so you can have all three, you can have one of the three, that you know more about it than the average person who's going to sit on a jury. Is there any way that she can't be fairly characterized as giving the work history that she testified to in voir dire and the nursing training and the sexual assault nursing training she described, that she could be fairly classified as not knowing more about this subject than the average person who's going to sit on the jury? Heck, that she couldn't be fairly characterized as not knowing more about this than you or me.
I would think that she could be fairly characterized as knowing more than I do, certainly. But I'll also say this,
I'll join the stipulation. She knows more than both of us.
But there is also no indication that anybody has ever established her, quote, knowledge to be correct.
Well, except that's what the court does. And the court may be wrong, and it may be junk science, but the court serves a gatekeeper function. She described where she was trained, where she worked, what she did, and the court accepted that. And in fact, there was no real challenge that any of that was false or incorrect or wrong. It's just that the only challenge was you don't have the certification.
Right.
You didn't take a test. But the statute, the rule regarding expert witnesses doesn't require that she have taken a test.
And I guess what I would say, Your Honor, is that the purpose of the test is that it provides the confirmation of the experience, the confirmation of the education and the training that this witness does not present. And if the court wants to say, that's up to the jury, let the jury sort it out.
It's up to the court.
But doesn't all that only matter if the training and certification, you know, actually, you know, is important to something? In other words, let me give you an analogy. If a police officer is called to testify to following certain procedures in preserving a crime scene, do they have to be qualified as an expert in order to do that? Or can they simply say, I'm a police officer, we have these procedures, and I follow them?
I think that would be... I mean, I haven't thought about it in detail as to what the... I mean, nobody ever qualifies somebody as an expert to... at least I've never seen it happen in my murder cases on a crime scene.
You make my point for me. It seems to me we're mixing apples and oranges here. I mean, it's true that she has this expertise, and it's great and all that. It's certainly more than the average layman, and I'll join the two of you in suggesting that she probably knows more than I do about this stuff. But nonetheless... You know, the fact that she has this extra knowledge may or may not be material to anything that has to do with the admissibility of the results of this kit. In other words, if she said, you know, I opened this box, there's a list of procedures I'm supposed to follow, I did those things, here they are, I took swabs from this place, I took swabs from that place, I sealed them in test tubes, I packaged them up in a glassine envelope, I put my initials on them, whatever. I mean, I'm just picking stuff out of the air here, but... why do you need special expertise? Why do you have to be an expert to say you did those things?
But here I think is the confluence of my two different problems. Problem number one is the lack of certification. Problem number two is she didn't follow best practices in doing it, and she acknowledges...
Well, let me ask you about that, because my read of the testimony was she said that it could be done, that DNA sample collection and... from the vagina in a suspected sexual assault could be done two ways, through the use of a speculum or purely by traction.
Right.
All right. And she said either is acceptable.
And she also acknowledged that the speculum is less likely to result in contamination and so on.
Right. So the jury, the trier of fact, the person qualifying, the expert, everybody who's involved in this is aware of all of that information. All right. But So no one testified that she was wrong in that, right? There was no suggestion that she wasn't right, that both of those are scientifically acceptable ways of doing this.
And that she chose the one that was less likely to produce the correct result.
Which goes to the, and I'm sure, in fact, I know, because I've read the record, a lot was made of that, and that there was perhaps there was a better way to do this. But that goes to the weight of the opinion, not to whether she could offer it. I mean, there is no evidence that the way she did, a lot is made in your brief of, it wasn't a scientifically valid way to do it. Except all the evidence was it was a scientifically valid way to do it, that there were two ways. One may be better than the other, but she said this is a scientifically acceptable way to do it. And I know you run into a logical circle that the person whose qualifications you're testifying are saying, no, I did it correctly. But if the trial court credited her as an expert and there's no countervailing evidence anywhere to suggest that she's not right, then how could we possibly say that traction is not a scientifically valid way to do this on this record?
Well, I guess my answer to you is to ask the court to, I don't know the best way to put it without sounding like I'm trying to be some kind of revolutionary here, but to actually take responsibility for getting the best scientific evidence in, and the only way you do that is by telling the Commonwealth on occasion, this is not the best scientific evidence, we're not going to let it come in. Now, granted, that probably should have been...
That's not your assignment of error, is it?
The assignment of error was specific to the lack of certification.
That's right.
And it becomes relevant because she didn't actually follow the best practices. There was, in fact, a contemporaneous objection to her lack of certification. There was not a contemporaneous objection to the speculum issue. However, Mr. Allen...
And so under the rules governing what we're allowed to look at and what we're not allowed to look at, aren't we stuck with just the certification issue?
Well, but you can be informed by the other problems in the case in deciding whether that issue is relevant.
You're into your rebuttal.
Yes, I am.
And as you predicted, we did not let you sit down when you wanted to. Ms. Adelfio.
That's right. Good afternoon. May it please the court, Catherine Adelfio on behalf of the Commonwealth. The trial court in this case did not abuse its discretion when it qualified Ms. Balchunas as an expert in sexual assault forensic examinations. The abuse of discretion standard is very difficult for this defendant to overcome. It would have to be clear that Ms. Balchunas was not qualified under the record, and this particular record demonstrates the opposite. Ms. Balchunas' college education, the 80 hours of training that she underwent for sexual assault nurse examinations, in addition to her daily practice as an RN and
well,
as
let me interrupt you because I think there's like three different questions that probably could be answered here, any of which would get you to the same place. One is, does it even matter? Well, let's assume she's not an expert. Does that matter in this context? Number two, assuming she is an expert, you know, is that good enough, or is the certification, the extra certification required in this particular context? I mean, you know, she clearly did offer at least one opinion, maybe two, depending on how you classify them, but it seems to be the thrust of the evidence here was that she gathered the evidence from a rape victim, a sexual assault victim, and testified as to how she did it. She followed a set of instructions in a kit that was provided by the Commonwealth of Virginia, and was subject to cross-examination about that. So explain to us, you know, why any of this matters.
It doesn't, Your Honor. Basically, for so many reasons. So Rule 5A:12 limits the defendant's, the court's consideration of this issue to only whether or not Balchunas was properly qualified. To the extent the defendant argues that the DNA evidence was inadmissible, that is not encompassed by the assignment of error. Furthermore, it was waived below pursuant to Rule 5A:18 because he never argued below that the court should not consider the DNA evidence because Ms. Balchunas was never certified. As the court has pointed out, essentially, Ms. Balchunas testified as a fact witness, and she told the jury how she came to collect the cervical swab. Any errors that or any problems with that collection goes to the weight assigned to the collection rather than that collection's admissibility. Mr. Defense Counsel was free to argue about the weight of the collection. In fact, he did so.
But let's do the flip. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Let's do the flip side. Let's assume that she did give an opinion that could have been detrimental. Is there any question she doesn't qualify under 2702?
There is no question she does not qualify. First of all, there's no step.
There's no question.
And there's no question. She's qualified, properly qualified as an expert.
I think that's probably the better way.
I'm sorry for the double negative. There's no statute that requires that she be licensed to testify as an expert in sexual assault forensic examinations. Not only that, Velasquez makes clear that you do not need to be licensed to qualify as an expert in sexual assault examinations. And basically, her degree of knowledge was beyond the common intelligence of ordinary experience of other people. That was sufficient to qualify her as an expert because her knowledge would assist the jury in understanding the issue before the court.
What about Mr. Snook's argument that because she was qualified as an expert, that gave more credence to her testimony for purposes of a jury assessment?
I would suggest that that was not before the trial court at any point. That was waived by Rule 5A:18. I frankly don't think it's encompassed by the assignment of error either.
But even if it is, if she's qualified, if she gets an imprimatur from being an expert and she actually is an expert, that's okay, right?
And he was that is okay. And he was free to argue that she did not that. In fact, he did argue that it was possible that the defendant's DNA ended up in the child's cervix through some mistake in the collection process. I think that was sort of suggested through the cross-examination of Ms. Balchunas, and I know that during closing argument he suggested that basically the DNA was present because they were in the same house. And so,
is this all academic in terms of the various waiver arguments?
I'd suggest that any question about the admissibility of the DNA evidence is academic, and I would say that to the extent that he's challenged the witness's expert qualification, she's clearly qualified under Velasquez, citing Combs and Fitzgerald, because she clearly has. She was trained as a professional, and she was qualified.
The only objection that was made at trial was that the court should reject her as an expert because she lacked the same certification.
That's correct.
That was the only objection made at that point.
That's correct. And certification is not required. Unless the court has any other questions.
Thank you, Ms. Adelphi.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Snook?
If I could make just a couple of quick points. The first point I would like to make is that my basic concern about the inordinate reliance that juries place on forensic evidence is that also of the concern of the Virginia Supreme Court in Billups versus Commonwealth, where the court noted that the more esoteric the field, the more difficult it becomes for laymen to greet it with skepticism when scientific evidence goes off the rails, and I submit that that's the situation here. As far as specific waiver questions, there is one point that I would raise and mention is, as the Supreme Court also held in Commonwealth versus Miller, and we have that cite in our brief as well, and the quote in the brief, that in that case, when Dr. Eileen Ryan was disqualified or was held to be not an expert, then all of her testimony and all of the evidence and the tests that she did also went out the window.
And that's a good point. But the other point that you cite Commonwealth versus Miller for is that the court upholding the disqualification of Dr. Ryan because she was not trained, I believe, in the diagnosis and treatment of sexual proclivities because it was a civil commitment of sexually violent predators.
Right.
But, of course, the SVP statute specifically limits who may give that testimony to a certain class of people. And that goes to the first question I asked you here.
Oh, that's right.
Well, Miller has nothing to do with the with this case because there is no similar statute.
Unless one takes the position that when the legislature has chosen to define a sane nurse, sexual assault nurse examiner, and the only difference here is that we're calling her a sexual assault forensic examiner, and she's giving all of the same opinions, that the difference is semantic rather than actual, and that in fact somebody performing a sane evaluation, a PERC kit, has to be either perhaps a doctor or at least a sane nurse who has got that training. And again, the issue that...
Let me stop you right there, because where in the record is there any reflection that any particular training is required to take a PERC kit? I mean, I'm sure every victim would prefer that a medical professional that's properly trained, you know, be the one to deal with them when they're in a hospital setting and they're part of a criminal investigation. But from the standpoint of the law, there's no requirement for such, is there?
I do not know of any statute that says that.
Unlike the case you just cited, here, this nurse didn't do any testing. She simply, you know, recovered the evidence. The testing was done at the lab, which generated a report, you know, from which a serologist or a forensic technician of some sort would testify as to the actual DNA analysis as between the sample recovered and the known sample from your client.
But I think that we could all agree, and I assume that particularly the women in the situation would agree, that it would be a very good idea to have somebody with some training and some expertise doing this evaluation.
But what the law requires, not what people might prefer.
I would think that the law, if the law doesn't specifically require it by statute, then a court ought to exercise some control over the process to say, we're not going to have the pizza delivery person qualified to do this. We want somebody with actual credentials.
So. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Schultz, for coming down and greet counsel.